So thank you for joining us on the show. So what inspired you to write text messages from the universe in the first place?
Well, that's a great question, Madeline. Thanks for having me on your show. You know, I know that you're a university radio station. Is mm-hmm. that right? Are you actually part of the university or
associated with the university? Yeah.
So I think I can just be a little bit radical here and say, when I did my doctoral thesis, I kind of came out as a spiritual poet, which sounds kind of weird, but kind of coming out of the spiritual closet, came out of this, like, it wasn't very cool when I was younger to kind of write about spiritual things. But I am really interested in spirituality, and this, I've always been fascinated by what happens after death.
Mm.
Where do we go? Is there any we there? What is the nature of consciousness? What is the nature of life and death? I guess I just really wanted to explore these really complicated questions. And I've sort of been trying to find a way to do it for a long time. And I was inspired for this book, Text Messages from the Universe, by a wonderful Tibetan text called the Tibetan Book of the Dead, or that's the popular translation. It's sometimes translated as Liberation Through Hearing and other titles. It's a text that was apparently first written, I think, in the 8th century and then hidden because they didn't think it was going to be ready to be understood, and then rediscovered in the 14th century, and only in the 20th century did it sort of come into Western consciousness.
Mm.
And it's a text that is read by monks to people as they actually die. So it's like a teaching as you die. And in the 49 days after you've died, to guide your spirit as it goes through this transition from death to rebirth. So I thought, well, this is a beautiful kind of structure and a beautiful metaphor to explore, and something that's quite unknowable. And so I wrote this text, which is kind of, I guess, a contemporary reimagining of that idea, where the voice is speaking to the reader or the viewer, and taking them on a journey into their own afterlife.
Oh, wow. That is deep. Really deep. That's amazing. That's incredible. I know there's a lot of amazing texts within Buddhist cultures, and particularly within the three main sects, but I hadn't particularly gone into this one too much. I've mainly focused on Theravada and Mahayana, not Tibetan. So that's quite interesting. I actually didn't know that about that particular text. So, wow.
There you come. You learn something new every day.
Look, I do.
I think it's kind of this really strange and fascinating idea. And one of the things that I understand around the tradition is that, you know, it's literally read to people as they die and in the time after they died, but it's also kind of meant to be read while you're alive to kind of learn things so that you can take advantage of the moment. I mean, I guess one of the interesting things, I remember one of my yoga teachers said to me years ago, Sharon Gannon from Jiva Mukti Yoga, one of the founders of Jiva Mukti Yoga in New York, she said, Richard, you need to practice spiritual practice while you're alive, because when you're dying, when you're sick, it's really hard. And when you're dead, it's really hard. I kind of thought she was joking, but then I was like, actually, no, it's true. It's like when you're sick, you know, you're really distracted and stuff, and you're in pain, you're in fear. And when you're dead, either you're dead altogether or you don't have a body. So you don't have the grounding of a body. So a body gives you a sort of sense of, agency and physicality. And even though we're already challenged enough in our bodies to stay calm, but without one, apparently it's even harder. So I just thought this is a really fascinating metaphor for our dying and our deaths, but also our lives, because we're already kind of lost and trying to find our way. So I thought it was a nice metaphor for a lot of things.
Yeah, 100%. It sounds lovely. So now we talked about the book form, your book, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, a lot about books, but what about a visual form? How do you feel this book has transitioned into the visual form? And is there anything that felt freeing or limiting about a film?
That's a great question. So the text was evolving over a long period. I'll give you a little backstory here. The text was evolving over a long period and it was really hard to finish. I was really struggling because I was like, this is so difficult. And I'm not a guru and I don't ever pretend to be, but I'm really fascinated.
Yeah.
How will I ever pull all these fragments together? And then I got this commission from a French film festival to be part of this incredibly ambitious 13-hour film celebrating, wow. would you believe it, the birth of ballet. And they didn't have much budget. And I was like, what am I going to do? They gave me the music and I had to come up with everything else. And I was like, well, what do I have that kind of, and it was a sort of journey through the night based on Orpheus and stuff. So I was like, okay, well, I've got this text that I've been trying to finish and I can use that as this sort of journey through the dark night of the soul. And I can make a dance film that illustrates some of these ideas that are in there and sort of illuminates the text. And then that would also allow me to kind of structure and finish the text. So it was a kind of interesting process of the making of the film actually helped me finish the text. And then the film expands on the ideas in the text. So, for example, one of the ideas in the Tibetan Book of the Dead is that you keep seeing figures and images and particularly figures that are really strange and awkward and terrifying, and you don't know what they are. Eventually, you come to see them as your own projections, and you come to see them as not ugly and terrifying, but beautiful. So I thought, well, I can use dancers to represent all these different figures, these strange figures that you see in this dislocated state. So that was one thing that allowed me to expand beyond the text into a sort of a broader interpretation. And another one was that I thought, well, this is a kind of deconstruction of this is a completely non-realist film. There is no reality. We don't know the truth of what it's like when we die. So what a great chance to kind of to sort of deconstruct cinema as a medium of realism, because I get to use my imagination as to what this world could be like. And one of the things I did was I took many, many photographs where I went into things like much more detail than you'd normally see. So you don't really know what they are. So it's all about this kind of highly focused moments of beauty, but disorientation with these dancing figures that are incredible, that are in these incredible costumes that kind of just sort of take you through a very strange interior landscape. So I think the film allowed me to expand on the ideas in the text. Of course, you could expand on them in lots of different ways. Those were the tools that I had, and that was the opportunity I had to explore that. So I made that original film for them, and then after that, I took it and took the idea and developed it some more as a standalone film.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. The duality of the dance versus, you know, something that's very much alive and living versus the Book of the Dead being completely opposite. That's really quite, you know, involved and heavily detailed.
Well, yeah, I tried to be. And one of the other things that I did that, you know, how do you structure the journey through that? And I think one of the things is that the journey in the Bardo is a journey of opportunities in the original Tibetan Book of the Dead to exit the cycle of reincarnation, because ideally you don't want to keep coming back,
yep.
Especially like in a lower birth. You want to come back in a higher birth or not come back at all. So I took as another metaphoric language, I took the idea of the chakras. So I don't know if you know much about the chakras, but they're a sort of a Vedic yogic idea of these psychic energy centers that are associated with the body, but also not only in the body, but they're a metaphor to represent the different aspects of ourselves. And there are seven chakras associated with different parts of the body, with different emotions, with different textures, colors, tastes, psychological states that are blocked or open. And so use that as a kind of a a sort of structural language as well. So we have this journey through the chakra system in terms of the locations, and these photographs that I took as background locations for the dancers to be part of, and also the journey of the dancers in terms of the kind of movement they did and the kind of costumes they're wearing, which emphasize these different colors, qualities, and parts of the body. So that's another layer in there. As you say,
yeah,
there's a lot of layers going on. I mean, they're all interrelated and connected in the thematics, but just trying to find ways, I guess, to go, as exactly you asked me, from text to film. And there's this incredible score by a Polish composer, Ola Turkiewicz, which was what I was originally given. So in contrast to what I would normally do is make a film and have a composer compose to it,
yeah,
I actually was composing to the music.
Yeah, that's quite uncommon for films to have it that way. Yeah, usually it's all written afterwards. You get your cues so you can match, you know, the heightenness with the film, with the scene. And that's quite a feat, doing it the other way around, having to match it to music.
It was definitely a big challenge. But I think, and it was one of those things where, you know, you sort of walk around the streets for a while thinking, this is never going to work. I'm just going to kill myself. And then you're like, oh, well, it could be about walking the back streets and dying. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, it was challenging. And maybe the challenge sort of fed into it. I do want to acknowledge the amazing costume designers for this. This was Olivia Adieu was the costume designer, and Azure Susan Schofield was the accessories costume designer. And I got them to work together so that they kind of kept expanding on each other's work.
Mm.
And I guess the whole film and the my sort of theory was, look, all these different art forms have these moments where they can glimpse the eternal and they can touch on the indescribable. But maybe if I bring them all together and I embrace the challenge of, working backwards and trying to, you know, put these different things together in ways one might not normally do it, maybe that kind of fusion, that fusion reactor will allow the project to go even further in this direction of the sort of luminal and the transcendental, and sort of touch on things that couldn't be discovered otherwise, because they're kind of discovered through the backwards nature of putting them together.
So both this book and movie cover themes of death and reincarnation. How do you think this addresses society's need for an answer for the question, what does happen when we die?
Well, that's a great question. I think, one thing is, I don't know the answer, and I'm certainly not saying this is the answer. I'm very interested in spirituality, but I'm not particularly, you know, I'm not religious, or this isn't a religious doctrine or anything like that. I just want to say that. So I guess if you think about the big themes, which is sort of love, sex, death, the sort of things that people really care about, I hope that this film and this book gives people a place to reflect on these things, because they are really important as far as I can see for all of us. They're there all the time, but a lot of our, you know, I don't want to sound like a boring person complaining, but a lot of our society is about distracting from those fundamental things that we all have to deal with. And I hope that this project is helpful for people, because it gives them a chance to sort of quiet down and have a think about these ideas and see how they relate to this particular interpretation. I think there's space in the work for people to come to bring their own ideas and to, you know, I try to ask questions, not give answers. And I think, but asking the questions in an area like this, I hope, is really fruitful and in some ways kind of healing, because, you know, it's not, I don't think it's particularly helpful that we spend so much of our energy denying and distracting from the fundamentals of our existence.
Well said. Well said. I 100% agree with you on that. We do definitely spend too much time with the distractions of the world and you know, things that are just right there in front of us rather than thinking about the big things that really actually impact us. So you're right. Giving a safe space can definitely give people that opportunity to work through some things that they may not have had a chance to work through before. So, yeah. Well said, actually. I wasn't, when John put this question to me, I was like, I don't know about this one, but okay, let's give it a shot.
Well, I'm glad that thanks, John, and I'm glad that we've overcome your resistance. I hope it overcomes a lot of people's resistance. I mean, you know, I guess you don't do work like this to make money.
Yes.
You do work because you're trying to make a contribution in some way. You're trying to give, yeah, be make something positive in a way, even though it's about death. I think it's trying to make a positive contribution, and I will say that the many people who worked on it, I can't name them all, but they did it with such a beautiful sense of giving. I think you know, a sense that this was something of real value that they could put their energy into in a wholehearted way and feel good about.
Oh, that's wonderful. So where can our listeners see the movie?
So Saturday the 29th of April at 6:30 p.m. at the Ritz Cinemas in Randwick.
Oh, lovely.
Which is at the end of the tram line, if you're catching that new tram line, 145 St. Paul Street. The Ritz Cinema is a gorgeous old cinema. If you haven't been, it's one of the beautiful old cinemas in the city. And it's all Art Deco. It's been refurbished. So it's just a beautiful place to be. And it has all kinds of great programming all the time. You know, lots of all the whatever's on now, but also, you know, they have festivals of various kinds, and they can play old 35mm film prints and stuff. So this film is actually being presented by the Fantastic Film Festival Australia, which has on in Melbourne and Sydney. And this event is exclusive, though, to Sydney. So, yeah, Saturday, it's about not too long from now, Saturday, 29th of April. Come around 6:30. You can come a bit earlier if you like. Get your photo taken on the red carpet. then you go in, and every ticket, tickets, we've kept them really cheap because we've kept them at $30, which I think is six times cheaper than going to the opera. And, you know, it's really inexpensive for what you're going to receive, I hope, because one of the first things you receive is a free copy of the book with the ticket.
Oh, wow.
So you get the book, and then when you go into the cinema, and while you're waiting, you start to look at it, and you go, wow, this is a really beautiful book. It's got a gorgeous cover painting by the Australian painter Michelle Hiscock, and inside it's got all these images from the film. So you're kind of holding the work in your hands, and then there'll be the MC, Sammy Lucas Allen, will introduce it, do Northern Country and all that, thanks. And then there'll be a book launch speech by Michelle Seminara, a wonderful poet and curator, and she'll talk, and also formerly yoga teacher, and she'll talk about the themes and ideas. And then the film will start. So you've been already kind of looking at it and going, oh, I've sort of got a piece of it here. And then on the screen, you'll see some of the images that are in the book, and you'll see the words that from the book on the screen. And in this one-off special event, I will be actually standing next to the screen, and I will be reading the text from the film as the film goes on. So it's, becomes a fully immersive event. You're holding the text, you have it, and you can take it home later to look at it more. And you'll be able to read stuff on the screen, hear it in a sort of completely kind of immersive interior but communal experience into the deeper layers of the self.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. We'll pop our the link online so that everyone can grab tickets. That sounds really incredible. I've never heard of a film showing like that. So that's really cool.
I think it's a one-off. I think it's the first ever. I haven't heard of one either. I'm not saying it is, but I was inspired by, you know, what I really love is you go to those old movies and they've got like an orchestra playing or something. So kind of like that, in the sense that it's like there's a screening and the film has music, but in this case, there's a live element, which is me speaking the text. So Yeah, and then anyone who wants to come afterwards can come up to the Ritz bar for the after party, and I'll be signing books, and some of the cast and crew will be there, and other people. So should be a lovely kind of just chance to chat and meet people, and yeah, that's the
Wonderful.
plan.
Well, thank you for joining us on the show.
My great pleasure. Thank you for having me.